The workday is done. Social media is heating up.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Welcome to Sports Talk with Personality. You riding with us?
Yes.
Great. Coming to argue?
That's a given. That's a given.
Even better.
Let's get the show going.
Clock out, crank up.
People got the popcorn. Let's give them a show.
The drive starts now on WSJS.
Welcome in to a Thursday drive right here on WSJS. News, talk, and sports for the triad. I'm Will Dalton, also known as the WD. And despite the crappy weather outside, your boy is in a terrific mood. Just watched the Yankees annihilate the Rangers 9-2 right here in the studio. I'm wearing my Canes Stadium Series hoodie that I got for a great deal at Goodwill. I couldn't be doing better. I was ready for the Canes horn to fire me up. Oh, there it is. There it is. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. But that's actually not where I want to start. I want to start with another one of our professional sports franchises. Because there's very little doubt in my mind, and probably yours as well. I'm sure many of you have thought about this. The disrespect for the Carolina Panthers is real. They might be, and probably are, in terms of the offseason landscape and the looking ahead to next year, the most disrespected team in the NFL. So there was the episode in Seinfeld where there was the bit, they're real and they're spectacular. Those who know, know. The disrespect for the Panthers is real, but it ain't spectacular. It's not. Despite winning 8 games last year, winning the division, taking a Super Bowl contender in the LA Rams to the brink, and really a soft coverage on defense away that allowed Matt Stafford, the eventual MVP, to go 71 yards up the field, they were right there to take them out in Bank of America Stadium. Should have. Did what they needed to do it, just not on that last drive defensively. Most sports books that you look at have the Panthers at either 6.5 or 7.5 next year. They have them regressing. So let's look at some of the reaction to this. It's not just me. It's not just us here in the state of North Carolina. Rich Eisen, the other week, post-NFL draft, on his show, they were going over some of the totals that Vegas has for the NFC South. And here's what Rich's reaction was when they got to the Panthers.
Panthers 6.5.
You know what? The disrespect is real. The disrespect is real.
Panthers 6.5.
Oh, are you serious? That is disrespectful. That is an over.
Really?
You don't think Carolina's going to...
Oh, they're definitely...
What, that was Fugazi last year? Yeah. They got Jalen Phillips, Devin Lloyd. Come on, man.
Rich Eisen was very surprised to hear this. But it's not just Rich. Let's go to another national talking head. Kay Adams, yesterday on her show, when they were looking at the point totals, got to the Panthers. Here's how it sounded.
6.5. Is this the most egregiously slap in the face line on the board on FanDuel Sportsbook? I think so. First of all, they're going to regress. They've been taking a perfect step up and up and up ever since Canales got there. And the roster gets better and better. Dan Morgan, more comfortable and more comfortable, crushing it. The defense, Devin Lloyd, Jalen Phillips in the mix. Derek Brown should be Pro Bowler, All Pro. J.C. Horn, one-handed interceptions all over the place. How are you taking a step back? I don't understand. 6.5 is crazy. And I do think we see a nice leap forward.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's not just us in the state of North Carolina you know, being homers. Like, it's legitimate. It's very real. Even to the point where division rival fans are like, what is this? Like, if you go on, you know, YouTube comments or social media comments talking about these totals and you get to the Panthers, like, I've seen plenty of Saints fans, Falcon fans, Buccaneer fans that can't believe how idiotic this is. This might be, you know, with the additions in free agency that we've discussed at length, with the drafting that they've done the last couple of years, like, this might be the most stacked Panthers team from top to bottom that we've seen since 2015 when they went to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying this team is going to the Super Bowl. I'm just saying from a roster depth and personnel standpoint, it's probably the most stacked they've been since that year. But let's go over some of, now that we've established how ridiculous this number is, let's take a look at maybe why this could be the case. I'll tell you one straight up that it is. I think Vegas believes the division's gotten better. I think so. I mean, the Saints, they seem to have a solid quarterback in Tyler Shuck. I don't know if he's the future, but he had the Saints playing pretty well towards the end of the year. They were a little pesky. They added Travis Etienne to the backfield from Jacksonville. Alvin Kamara is still there. Not sure if he's going to stay. Not sure how that works out, but they're going to have a good back right there. Noah Fant, Chris Olave, they got some dangerous weapons out there for Tyler Shuck. And then looking at the Falcons, I don't know what to make of Tua Tagovailoa just yet. I mean, he's going to be playing in a dome, so I guess that'll be beneficial. But you got Michael Penix and him battling it out at the quarterback spot. We'll see what that looks like. But they might have the best weapons in the division. Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Darnell Mooney. Like, they got guys. And then the Buccaneers, they're probably the team of the group that has taken a step back when you lose Mike Evans, who physically is a loss, in the locker room is a loss. I mean, the guy's been there forever terrorizing the Panthers. You all know that. That's a tough one. But they do still have Bucky Irving in the backfield, Chris Godwin, Amika Abuka. So they've got guys, and Baker Mayfield, very competent, solid quarterback, but such a loss in Mike Evans not being there. I do, however, think they're factoring in not just the division getting better. I think they're factoring in the fact that the Carolina Panthers have the third toughest schedule in the NFL. That's a fact. They do. They also have to take into consideration, I'm sure, the questions that are still there about Bryce Young. He has gotten better, you know, each year since coming back from being benched week two years ago, leading the Panthers to 5 wins, looking great the last 2 months of the year when he got back that year, taking the Chiefs to the brink, taking the Eagles to the brink, the two teams that were in the Super Bowl that year. Come to think of it, you look at that, and then the fact that he kind of outdueled Matt Stafford against the Rams this year, like, they've gone against some really good teams, and Bryce Young has played really well against them. So there's that. There's the fourth quarter comebacks, of course, that we know about, 12 of them. But he's put them in the situations some of those times where they needed to come back with some interceptions, with some fumbles, with turnovers of different kinds. So there are still questions about Bryce Young that need to be answered, and they factor that in probably as well. And the fact that he's going to have a completely new play caller this year. Brad Idzik's taken over as he's been the offensive coordinator, but he's taking over calling plays this year. So for all of those reasons, I think that's how Vegas justified getting to 6.5 wins for the Panthers, 7.5 on some other sites. But despite all of those things, there is no reason that should be the number for the Carolina Panthers. I see this as a 9-10 win team. I really do. With everything they've added in free agency and in the draft and another year for Bryce Young under his belt, the Carolina Panthers are clearly one of the most disrespected, if not the most disrespected team in the NFL right now. 336-777-1600. That's the number to call. Do you believe the Panthers are the most disrespected team in the NFL? Or is it somebody else? 336-777-1600 is the number to call. Morgan Corson is the producer back there behind the glass. How would you answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, this team has had a turnaround that reminds me of the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
Right? Irrelevant, a nobody in the NFL, a bottom feeder for a little bit, and is starting to turn it around in year three, right? I mean, think about the Lions. Finding late round draft picks that can help them and get the starters out of in the later rounds is something really hard to do, and both teams have been able to do it. Both teams are always underestimated. I feel like the Lions at that point had a few things they could have adjusted and made things better. They still weren't sold on Jared Goff. We're still not 100% sold on Bryce Young, but we know he's a solid quarterback, and he's not going to get into much, if not any, off the field issues.
No, none. He doesn't.
He seems like an amazing person to be around. He seems like a great leader in the locker room. I just feel like there's a few questions that Vegas is unsure about. And I'm going to be honest, I don't think Vegas has paid that close of attention to the Panthers.
Probably not. Probably not. Let's talk about these Canes. Game 3, 8 o'clock tonight in Philly. Our next guest, or our first guest of the day, David Glenn of the NC Sports Network, going to join us at 4:30. He was actually at the Game 2 overtime win the other night with a couple of Philly fans, so that'll be interesting. I want to get his take on that. But this game, I think, is going to get wild. I think that building is going to be loud and rocking. You know how Philly fans are in every sport. We saw in Game 2 how crazy this series could get in terms of the preview that we got in the regular season, those four games that none of them were decided in regulation. It was either overtime or a shootout. We finally got a viewing of that in Game 2. What could be some of the deciding factors in Game 3? Well, for one, the Canes have to cut down on the penalties. Luckily, it hasn't burned them yet. Keyword, yet. Also, the Canes are getting probably the best goaltending in these Stanley Cup playoffs of any team in Freddie Anderson. So the question is, can they sustain that? He had 32 consecutive saves after giving up the two goals early in Game 2. 15 of those shots were in overtime. Flyers outshot the Canes 15-8 in OT, and Taylor Hall just happened to get the one to go through. Flyers, they're also going to continue to try and get the Canes in the gutter. Carolina has to stay out of trouble, you know, not taking the bait on that post-whistle. And I think a big factor in favor of the Canes, the Flyers got some injury concerns. So they were already without Owen Tippett, and now we learned earlier today that a key guy forward, Noah Cates, is going to miss the rest of this round with a lower body injury. So I think the Flyers gave the Canes their best shot in Game 2 and still didn't get it done. So give me the Canes tonight to go up 3-0. Hit it! Hit that horn! Let's go! Yeah! The beer skate. We've got it up in the air. Let's go. Canes go up 3-0 tonight. We'll talk to DG about that in a little bit.
Facts, feelings, and the occasional bad idea. Welcome to The Drive, the Triad's longest-running live sports talk show.
Back at it on a Thursday drive. David Glenn of the NC Sports Network going to be with us in just a little bit. Had John Hunter Nemechek yesterday. Appreciate him joining. Because Watkins Glen coming up this weekend. And in that spirit, We thought it'd be a good time to go into the fast lane with Morgan.
Where speed meets the mic.
Wow, what a move!
This is the Fast Lane on WSJS.
Put on your seatbelt, check your mirrors, let's begin.
Your fast track to racing talk.
Yeah, as you said, it is Watkins Glen week. This is one of my favorite tracks. I don't know why. I'm not really a road course kind of guy. I like turning left, but this one's always been one that I've always enjoyed to watch and play on the video games.
Didn't Jeff Gordon used to tear up road courses?
Yes, he has the all-time win leader, nine road course wins.
How about that?
But this one's going to be interesting. They added some tire barriers. So, first of all, this track is interesting because normally the cars run counterclockwise on the track.
Yeah.
So from left to right on your screen, this weekend they're going to be going right to left. They run this track clockwise.
So is that what they usually do?
That's what they normally do. So that's just it's the only track in the series that they do that for.
Why is that?
I don't actually know. I think that's just how the track is laid out.
Fair enough.
But another interesting thing is they added tire barriers. So turn one is always interesting on restarts because it's a right-handed 90-degree corner. So they'll run off the track a little bit because there's extra pavement. And they'll get some extra speed and more passing. You can't do that this year. They put a bunch of tires out there and you'll ruin your car.
Don't want that.
Out of turn five is 180 degrees.
That's quite a turn.
It's quite a turn. And you're carrying a lot of momentum because it's coming right out of a chicane.
A what?
A chicane. So
what is that?
So you're going down the straight. Instead of it just being a straight line, they add a little bit of a curve in it.
Okay.
So imagine like a bus stop, how they turn off to the side and then they go again.
Yeah.
It's a bigger bus stop type thing.
I see. So they have bus stops out here now in NASCAR.
Yeah. So I think that's actually called the bus stop. Funny enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Original.
But it's going into a 180-degree turn, and there's a runoff area, so you can take it a little wide and go past the bumps. Mm-hmm. And they added a tire barrier there as well, 20-foot tire barrier. And that's going to affect them running wide. And it's going to create less passing opportunity, but there's been a lot of wrecks and crazy wrecks there over the last 15 years. So it's going to help prevent very dangerous wrecks in those two corners, which is interesting. I'm glad they added tire barriers and just doing invisible lines, but we'll see how it works out this weekend. As far as your favorites go, Shane Van Gisbergen.
Good name.
Australian.
He sounded European.
Yeah. So
that's not Europe. Is
no,
it?
No, it's not.
He sounds international. Yes. That's what I'm getting at.
He actually comes from supercars, which is, in simple terms, Australia's version of NASCAR.
So it's not like IndyCars or drag race.
It's a stock car with a V8 engine in it.
Okay.
And they only run on road courses and street courses. And there's no bumping, no wrecking. You can't touch other cars. So it's civilized NASCAR on a road course, essentially. He came into this sport in 2023 with three supercar titles and 80 wins in, I think, 17 years. And he has absolutely dominated on the road courses. He has this advanced technique. He uses the clutch, gas, and brake in a certain order. And it helps him keep momentum in the corners. And that's where he gains his time.
That is interesting. And so there's like a method to the madness.
Yes. And he can't drive and he can't go left. But you add some rights in there and all of a sudden he can drive. This guy's very good. I think he has 5 or 6 wins on road courses already. And he's only been racing since 2024.
Not too shabby. Not bad.
Chase Elliott, your most popular driver. The youngest to ever win on a road course at 22 years old has 7 road course wins. He's a spectacular road course racer. Hasn't figured it out in the next-gen car, but with this new Chevy body, you can't count him out, especially with the advantages. They're peaking in the right time to win on a road course. Speaking of another Chevy, Connor Zilich is a rookie in the NASCAR series. He's struggled so far this year in a struggling team of Trackhouse, but he's phenomenal on road courses. Chase Elliott's teammate Alex Bowman, another phenomenal road course ringer, won Chicago street course last year, I believe. So he's not to be counted out. Of course, you've got your Tyler Reddicks and your Christopher Bells. But my long shot pick is AJ Allmendinger.
Okay.
His nickname is AJ Allmendinger, road course ringer. It's got a little bit of a rhyme to it.
Rolls off the tongue, I see.
His team was only part-time, racing only the road courses and the super speedways, and he got a win for them. When they're only part-time, they were supposed to be in 40th place. He can race road courses like no NASCAR has seen before him, really. Like, yeah, you had your Jeff Gordons, but he was consistently up there. Jeff Gordon had a period where he wasn't up there. AJ Allmendinger's always in the battle for that and not on the ovals, so watch out for him.
The Watkins Glen preview. It's good stuff. See, these are things that I didn't know. Didn't know as much about road courses. That's why we do this segment.
Yeah, road courses have been getting more and more involved in NASCAR, and whether you love them or hate them, you're going to have to embrace it. So
yeah. Sounds like the Steelers are going to be embracing Aaron Rodgers this weekend. That's what the report is. So, per Ian Rappaport, Aaron Rodgers set to visit with them this weekend and is likely to play for them this season. So this would reunite him, of course, with Mike McCarthy, who he played with for 13 seasons in Green Bay, won a Super Bowl together, had a little bit of a falling out at the end there, but Aaron did win two of his four MVPs under his coaching, so do with that what you will. Here's what I take from this. And my uncle's a big Steeler fan, so you know, I talked to him about these types of things. The Steelers don't do quarterback quite like the rest of the NFL does in terms of developing. Like, you get to a point where you try to draft a new guy. You know what I mean? And it seems like they don't have much of a desire to pull a what the Rams just did with Ty Simpson, for example, to kind of draft their guy for the future. Now, they've drafted some young quarterbacks, Will Howard, Drew Aller, but those aren't guys where it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to turn. Clearly, that's not what's going to happen when you got Aaron Rodgers coming in. And, you know, you can look at Jordan Love. You know what the Packers did with him, you know, bring him in. He's going to be the future eventually. Like, the Steelers don't really do that. They don't have that desire to be bad for a year or two to reset the franchise. They're just stuck in this loop of, you know, they've won 10 games the last 3 years. So that's good. But they've also lost in the wild card those 3 years because there's been a cap of what they're able to do. So they're just kind of stuck in this loop of being pretty solid in the regular season, early exit in the playoff. This is probably why Mike Tomlin left, to be honest with you. No change in the front office, the management. So, I mean, just looking at it, the Steelers haven't won over 10 games since 2020 when they won 12. And guess what they did? They lost the wild card. They've lost the wild card 5 of the last 6 years to put this in perspective. So, that's great. Aaron Rodgers, it sounds like he's going to play for the Steelers this year. Probably looking at a minimum 8 or 9 win team. But to be moving in the right direction as an NFL franchise, it's one of two extremes. You either have to bottom out and reset with a new quarterback, with a new roster, new team, or you have to be a Super Bowl contender. It's like one of those extremes. And they're just stuck in neutral, to stick with the racing theme. They're stuck in neutral. It's a loop. And Steeler fans, I'd like to hear from you. I don't know, you know, how many Steeler fans we have out there listening. Probably a good amount. 336-777-1600 is the number to call. What do you think of this? Is Aaron Rodgers, you know, him coming back, does that excite you? Do you feel like you're a contender? Or you want to see it kind of just tore down to the studs and start new for the first time in a long, long time?
Your team. Your takes.
Let's get the show going.
Your drive home.
See, this is going to be one of those times where we actually get to talk a little bit of hockey with our guy, David Glenn of the NC Sports Network, because you actually went to the Game 2 overtime win with a couple of Flyers fans. Is that right?
It was crazy, Will, and it's great to be with you again. Long story short, many people in your audience know I grew up in the Philadelphia area. I was a Flyers fan. I converted to the Canes long ago. But one of my best friends from 10 years old still lives up there, still is among my closest friends, and he wanted to wear a Flyers jersey to the game in Raleigh on, what was that, Monday night? Monday night. So the lovely and talented Maria, my wife, went in an old-school Tuomo Ruutu jersey, and my buddy, his name is Chris McCormick. He tried to bridge the gap knowing he was wearing enemy colors by selecting a Rod Brind'Amour Flyers jersey to attend the game. So it brought a lot of funny, you know, 99% positive comments from Canes fans. Hey, that's kind of cool. You're rooting for the Flyers, but you're honoring Rod Brind'Amour, you know, the legendary coach of the Canes who spent a lot of years in Philadelphia. So it worked out great. And for anybody who roots for the Canes, it worked out really great because for a long time, it looked like Philly was going to steal a victory in Raleigh.
It did. David Glenn of the NC Sports Network with us here in WSJS. So I was your intern many years ago, right around the bunch of jerks time for the Hurricanes. And I'm curious, do you think the Canes are ever going to get full respect from the hockey world until they finally hoist the Stanley Cup trophy?
Probably not. We've heard the small market stuff forever. Even in this amazing 8-year run of consecutive playoff appearances under Rod Brind'Amour, and I like to remind fans, 8 straight years of making the playoffs for the Canes came immediately after 9 straight years of missing the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That is maybe the most dramatic long-form turnaround in the history of the National Hockey League. And yet, as you said, they haven't hoisted the cup in that 8-year period. So, you know, some people don't believe Rod Brind'Amour's defense-oriented system can get them over that hump. That's part of the disrespect. Some people still think, Will, that Southern markets don't fully appreciate hockey, which is outrageous. I mean, it's been here for more than a quarter century at this point. There are tons and tons of knowledgeable Carolina Hurricanes fans who not only know their own team well, but understand the game, understand many of the opponents. You and I have lived through this evolution of us becoming a hockey state in addition to all the other wonderful things that we've been for even longer as a sports group of sports fans. So, I mean, there's always going to be critics, but the Canes won it all 20 years ago. People can't say that didn't happen. And, you know, other than the Colorado Avalanche, I'd say they have as good a chance of raising the Stanley Cup this year.
So I'll ask you this to finish up on hockey. Do you think, because, I mean, the Canes, and you might have answered the question right there at the end, but, you know, the Canes have gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals a number of times in the last handful of years. Florida Panthers have been a little bit of a problem in that. Do you feel that this is the strongest that the Hurricanes have ever looked under Rod Brind'Amour?
I do. And there's several reasons for that. One is when you compare rosters, the Carolina Hurricanes actually have more guys with more playoff experience than most of the teams they have to play the rest of the way. That was not the case early in the Rod Brind'Amour era. So that's a big thing. Another is just statistical. Remember, the 2006 Carolina Hurricanes were the highest scoring team in franchise history. It's not the only reason they won the Stanley Cup, but it was certainly one of the big reasons. Guess who broke that record? The 2026 Carolina Hurricanes are the highest scoring team in franchise history, counting like the Hartford Whalers days. They were the only team in the NHL, Will, that had seven players with 20 or more goals scored during the regular season. So some will say, well, you know, you don't have that Nathan MacKinnon or that mega superstar. Well, seven 20-goal scorers was the most in the NHL. So what they lack perhaps in that, you know, 100-plus point guy, they have a whole bunch of scoring depth. And guess what? One night it's Logan Stankoven. Another night it's Taylor Hall with the game winner in overtime. And you know that Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, Seth Jarvis, I mean, those guys are going to produce, and some have produced in this playoff. So nothing's a done deal. You know how it works, man. They're better than Philly, and I think they're going to win this series. Against Buffalo or Montreal, I mean, it'll be hard. But does this team have a better chance of getting over that Eastern Conference final hurdle than the three teams under Rod Brind'Amour that lost in that final four of hockey, so to speak? Yes, I think this team has a better chance to get all the way to the finals. And then if I were a Caniac, I would just hope that somebody knocks off the Colorado Avalanche because that's a machine that no matter how much you like the Canes, you have to admit the Avalanche is really, really, really good.
David Glenn of the NC Sports Network with us here on WSJS. Transitioning to a little bit of college basketball. So we learned that Duke, Amazon, they've now got this deal where they're going to be broadcasting three of their games, really good games, and it's going to be a, you know, yearly thing, it sounds like. NIL opportunities for Duke, as if they needed more. How do you think this is, because I mean, Duke, whether it was bringing in Rachel Baker, they were the first college basketball program to hire a GM, they seem to always take that first step in these things, and now they're doing it with this. How do you think this could change the landscape of, you know, broadcasting college basketball, college football games?
Well, we've already seen it all over the sports world, right? Mm-hmm. If you go back enough years, everything was on either broadcast television or network or cable television. And then eventually you got the expansion of cable and then the arrival of streaming and now the expansion of streaming, not only on places, you know, NBC has Peacock and ESPN has ESPN Plus, but now you have the true Amazon Prime, Netflix, and others that are pure. That's all they are, is streaming services. And we've seen it with the NBA. The NBA playoffs, sometimes it's on NBC, and sometimes it's on Amazon Prime or you know, Peacock or some other streaming service. So this is just a continuation, really an extension to the college level of what we've seen all over pro sports for a number of years at this point. And you're right. It's like one more layer of the cake. Duke basketball has branded itself by winning five NCAA titles. They've branded themselves by sending as many players to the NBA as anybody, way more than anybody in the ACC right now. They've branded themselves with the early hiring of the GM, being ahead of the curve with, you know, brand ambassadors, endowing all their scholarships in the men's basketball program. That takes a ton of money from boosters and otherwise to endow scholarships. That means the mega millions just sitting in a war chest somewhere fund all 15 scholarships in men's basketball forever. So you redirect your internal resources to other ways to, you know, to support John Shire and the Blue Devils. So this is one more way Duke gets to say, hey, we're different than everybody else in a positive way. You want to come, you want to win? Come to Duke. You want to go to the NBA? Come to Duke. You want to be in the biggest games on the biggest platforms? Come to Duke, right? I mean, it's a sales pitch that has been working long before this happened, but now it's just one more prong of a Duke sales pitch that obviously is working with transfers, working with international prospects, and working with, as even under John Shire, you know, some of the best high school recruiting classes in the country.
A few more things for you on the way out. Sticking with college, so the NCAA tournament expansion is official now. We just saw the bracket, what that's going to look like. They just put that out a little while ago. And it's gotten people talking now even more so about college football playoff expansion. And that the number that keeps being thrown out there is 24 teams. And you're seeing a lot of reaction to that. People very strongly opposing that, feeling that it would, you know, really, because I mean, college football seems like is even more relying on the regular season games than college basketball, just because of the juice of Saturdays in the fall. And if you lose to, if you're in Alabama or Georgia and you lose to two of the right teams, you're on the cut line in the playoff. How would you react to, you know, if they expanded that to 24? Where do you land on that?
I wouldn't like it. I'm one of those guys that I don't lose sleep about these things. Like philosophically, life is too short to you know, swear off a sport forever when 99% of people never follow through. But, you know, when they get so mad, I can't believe they've done this, right? Keep in mind, 90, according to polls, 90%+ of college basketball fans did not want the tournament expanded. The consumer overwhelmingly voted no, but the decision makers voted yes anyway. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what the media wants, what the consumer wants, if they see an avenue to another pot of gold, and that's what it would be. I know the expansion of the basketball tournament is not a huge pot of gold. It just adds to their existing enormous pot of gold. On the college football side, think about it. 24 versus what we had not too long ago, 4.
Yeah.
You know, that's a much bigger pot of gold, because so many millions of people watch those games and they know it. And in, you know, they'd probably get rid of conference championship games in football if they went that large with the playoff. And I'm not sure it would kill interest in college football, because in fact, more teams for a longer period would be candidates to be one of those 24. In other words, you could lose twice, maybe to the wrong teams, and still think, yeah, I think we could be one of those 24. So more teams would be in the running later, which generates conversation and more fan bases, which, you know, we haven't reached the point yet where college sports fans have thrown up their arms and said, I'm not buying tickets anymore. I'm not watching anymore. They say it, but they haven't done it in large enough numbers yet to punish the decision makers for these expansions. And yeah, bigger college football playoff is coming. It's just a matter of when and how large.
David Glenn, the NC Sports Network, speaking of losing sleep over things, listening to Will Wade the other day, it sounded like, oh, yeah, had a tough night's sleep the night before leaving NC State. I didn't know.
Sure you did, buddy.
Yeah, as if it wasn't months in the making. All right, David Glenn, NC Sports Network, we appreciate the time as always, and we will do it again next week.
Look forward to it, my friend. Keep up the good work.
The Triad's only live sports talk show, The Drive. Will Dalton turns your ride home into a full contact sports debate.
Almost done with hour number one right here on a Thursday drive. Gonna have some opportunities for you to win tickets today. That's what we're gonna have. Appreciate David Glenn for joining us just a little while ago. Darren Vaught of D1 Baseball of ESPN going to be with us next hour. Going to play some out of left field. Going to do that. But right now, we gotta play a different type of game. It's called WD Makes His Money Back. Let's do it in Dalton's Dollars. Stack it up, stack, gotta stack
it up. It's time to cash in. Welcome to Dalton's Dollars.
Show me the money!
Show me the money.
Breaking down the board and building the bankroll.
You know, you should always trust that little gut feeling you have on certain things. I knew better than to bet Knicks 10.5-point favorites last night. I knew it. They won game one. Obviously did that. But game two was going to get tight. And Philly was leading in the first half of this game. Knicks end up winning by 6. So that's a no bueno. I knew I should have taken Philly to cover it, but I didn't do it. Playoffs is a different beast than the regular season. Tyrese Maxey in said game here. I took him to have 3 or more threes. He went 1 of 6. He put him up. That was the theme for Philly last night. They got the shots. Just couldn't hit him. I took the under, Timberwolves, Spurs. Spurs decided to go off 133 points. Timberwolves with 95 of their own, so that didn't clear. Then, getting to hockey, Canadiens puck line against the Sabres. Canadiens lost 4-2. But hey, we do have one winner, though. It was a Paul Skeens night, all right? I took over 5.5 strikeouts against the Diamondbacks. He had 7. Let's go!
Show me the money!
So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get back to it tonight. I'm just gonna keep it short and sweet. 2 bets. 2 NBA bets. Not gonna overcomplicate this. This is what you do to get to bounce back when you're in the red. Just tiny little bites, tiny little wins, and then eventually you'll get there. Lakers are 15.5 point dogs again against the Thunder. Back-to-back games they have been. They didn't cover it in game one, losing by, what was it, 18? They cover it tonight.
Show me the money!
They do. They're not going to win tonight. They cover 15.5 tonight. They almost, again, they almost covered that in game one, despite having unnecessary turnovers, despite having a bad night from Austin Reeves, or as I call him, AR-15. I think Austin Reeves is going to get his face back tonight. I think so. Sure as heck not going to put up 8 points. I know that. And go 3 of 16 from the field. And 0 of 5 from 3. You get the point. Lakers cover that. Cavs, Pistons. Detroit's a 3.5 point favorite again. Picked them to cover that in game one. They did. I don't feel great about doing it again, though. I don't feel great about it. I honestly am not sure who wins this game tonight. However, I will take Donovan Mitchell to go over 2.5 threes.
Show me the money!
He went 4 of 10 from beyond the arc in game one, and he's hit 3 or more triples in 5 of his 8 playoff outings so far. These 2 bets are going to cash. They are going to cash. I feel terrific about it. You heard it here first. I'm speaking this into existence. I've done my homework. It's happening, guys. I'm sick of it. Sick of it. So I'm going to be a winner. That's been Dalton's dollars. I'm going to be a winner tonight. I am. I want you to be too. So Darren Vaught is telling me, who's going to join us at 5:15, he's going to be on the call this weekend for Wake Forest, Western Carolina. Out at the couch. Which got me thinking. He's going to be there. I'd like you to be there too. So call us right now, 336-777-1600. If you would also like to be at the couch for Wake Forest, Western Carolina. Western's pretty good.
Oh, they're very good. They beat number 5 Georgia this year.
So you want in on this. It's brought to you by Pancho Villa, Mexican restaurant and seafood. So this is for the May 10th game. May 10th. That's Saturday. We can count days out that far. Saturday's game, a pair of tickets, Western Carolina, Wake Forest. Call us right now.
I believe that's actually Sunday.
May 10th?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, it is. Sunday! Sunday, you know, I was looking at the calendar here on the fly very quickly. Just call and get the darn tickets. Just do it. Looking at last night's NBA action. Knicks up 2-0 now against the Sixers. No Embiid last night. That's how this series is going to be, though. Every game of it, I think. Physical, down to the wire. I ultimately think Philly's just going to run out of gas, personally. And you've got the Joel Embiid question. Like, yeah, he was out, but does it matter? You know, does it really matter? And, like, I'm even seeing, like, people discuss, should the Philly consider moving off him? I mean, he has had an injury history. He missed, obviously, the first 2 years of his career there. And it seems to always be something. I mean, he's a heck of a player. But, again, like, does it really matter that he's out in this series right now? So, These are things that are being discussed from this game. On the Knicks side of thing, Jalen Brunson, he's the closer on this team, but OG Anunoby is, he might be their best player right now with how he's looking. And he hurt his, he got hurt late in the fourth quarter. So that could be a blow for the Knicks, but I think they're going to be all right. Like we mentioned before, Philly had some looks last night. They just weren't hitting them. I think the Knicks look like the best team in the East right now in terms of the Spurs and the Timberwolves. Spurs look like the Spurs. That's all I got. Just blowing out the Timberwolves. Biggest loss in Timberwolves playoff history, I believe, last night.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
This is The Drive, talking sports the right way.
See, this is one of those days where we have David Glenn 1 hour, and then we have Darren Vaught another, the old tandem of the David Glenn show. And now intern Will's behind a mic too. Darren, how you doing, my friend?
Love it. The family tree is strong. The roots are just deepening, and the branches are growing. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So I'm excited about this game that you're going to be calling, are you calling the series Wake Western Carolina?
Two of the three, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Out at the couch, we have tickets for that, 336-777-1600. That is the number to call if you want to go to that game. But I'm excited to talk about this with you because my producer, Morgan, is an alum of Western Carolina, and so he's very passionate about this topic. Apparently, Western Carolina, they got a unit. Apparently, they got a squad. But you tell me, You're calling the game.
A legit Friday guy, a good lineup. They just beat Wofford this past weekend in a series that basically was for first place in the SoCon for conference supremacy. And this is the time in the calendar for ACC schools where you see it all over. Based on exam schedules and graduation schedules, sometimes they don't play conference series. Well, for a team like Wake Forest, who is, you know, like most, doing everything it can to improve its resume come postseason time, and we've got, 2 weekends left in the regular season, they kind of luck out here because you schedule Western not knowing exactly what they're going to be, and it turns out they're at this point, a projected tournament team because they're projected to win the Southern Conference. It'll be pretty good. I think we saw, Georgia Tech is one of the best teams in the ACC. They played a non-con last weekend against Xavier, which is another, good battle-tested team. And Xavier got a game from them. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Western gets at least a game from Wake Forest. I expect it to be pretty competitive. It should be fun.
Switching over to the major leagues. So we're well over a month into the regular season now. Who is the team that you've seen so far up to this point that you believe could be most likely to unseat the Dodgers, and why is it my Yankees?
I mean, the Yankees are an obvious answer, I think. They're certainly playing really well. Aaron Judge just continues to not, you used to see with other MVP types, you would see an MVP season, and then there would be like a regression to a lesser mean. And that's been the case with most players. And I mean that respectfully to some very good players without having a specific one in mind. But more often than not, that's the case with an MVP player, right? It's Cal Raleigh is kind of dealing with this right now. Had an MVP caliber season last year, has not started this season, nearing a quarter of the way through, in the same kind of way. Judge has just been on a tear for a handful of years now, and there's been no letting up. He is the driver of that machine for the Yankees. They're going to continue to get healthier as the season goes on. And Ben Rice might be even he might be a better MVP candidate as we speak right now than Aaron Judge. I think they're the obvious answer, but I know there are plenty of people listening, watching, however they're consuming us here, who would rather not see the Yankees and Dodgers in the World Series again. So I think maybe the Braves is another one. Like,
yeah,
they've clearly moved on from last year, which was a blip on the radar. It's a very talented team. They're healthy. Like, they're good. The Braves are another one. And I tell you what, there's a sneaky one. I really like the Cubs. I think
yes.
I like the Cubs a lot.
I wanted to ask you about them.
They're on fire right now. They've got a ton of youth on that team. There's even some like kind of local ties with Michael Bush playing super well, and Trent Thornton getting the win because of a Michael Bush offensive performance. They're really good. And I think they're going to be good for a while. Like, they're here to stay. If it's not this year for the Cubs, like, they're going to have plenty of opportunities. So that's, I mean, those are a few. I would say the Braves first, just because they're going to get their hands on the Dodgers first, theoretically, in the playoffs.
How much do you think not having Tarik Skubal for a while is going to affect the Tigers?
I mean, certainly it will. But that division's mayhem. So like, you can absorb a hit or two for a bit and still come out okay. And the important thing would be contend without him so that you can get him back and be a real player in the American League. So yeah, I mean, it certainly is going to affect them, just not, you know, it depends. It depends on how the rest of the team responds. Hopefully it's for their sake. It's not devastating to the point where it sounds like he's going to be back even quicker than they originally expected.
Darren Vaught of ESPN, D1 Baseball with us here on WSJS. Now is the part in the proceedings where we go out of left field.
From minds that wander off the beaten path.
Here we go.
Unexpected, unscripted, unbelievable.
I like it. It's simple, to the point.
It's the curveball of your day.
Bring the bare necessities of life.
Out of left field with Darren Vaught.
Quick point of contention, Will.
Yes.
Do we go out of left field or do we come from out of left field? I think you got it. It doesn't matter which one. I'm okay with either. You just got to figure it out.
I think we come out of left field. I think that's the way it's supposed to be phrased.
Yeah.
I kind of changed it up.
It comes from left field. So I don't think we go to,
you know,
we don't go out of left field.
I have this knack of changing the verbiage of certain things on the fly.
I mean,
when I'm just on a roll.
Wasn't anything that you changed necessarily. I just heard it and I was kind of like, huh, all right. Maybe that was quite out of left field of me.
Yeah, see?
Some would say it's an unusual question, but I guess we're not doing that anymore.
If you know, you know. I'll get us started here. So I saw Dan Hurley was on the field with the Field of 68, Rob Doster, Jeff Goodman, and he was telling a story how UConn had just had a terrible loss, and he realized when he was on his way home that he had forgotten that it was his wife's birthday. And so his move was, he happened to go right by a 24-hour Walmart. So he went in there, he got her a card, a Yankee candle, and a George Foreman grill. So the question here is, Morgan's shaking his head, have you ever forgotten somebody's birthday? And if so, like, what is your move to very quickly get a gift of some kind in that situation?
I don't think I ever, I mean, you're like, you know, things slip your mind. I don't know that I've forgotten in that dramatic of a way so that you have to do this huge damage control. I don't think I've got a good answer here.
See,
my solution is not going to be a George Foreman grill. I mean, I guess it depends on the recipient of such a gift, right? Like, if this was something his wife had been clamoring for forever, first off, they make a ton of money. She's probably got or has the opportunity to have 8 George Foreman grills, one for every room of the house. Like, I don't know. It seems like a weird one to me,
well,
George Foreman grill.
It's very out of left field. See, my move here is, does a gift card suffice, or does that reek of, like, it's a cop-out because you forgot or you didn't put much effort or thought into it, so you just gave somebody a gift card for somewhere?
Well, okay, if we're using Hurley as the hypothetical here, it's his wife. She, like, they, I don't know what their finances look like, how they handle that, but, like, I don't know. If he wants, if he's spending money on something, a gift card, it's just, that's a weird, in that sort of relationship, feels like a weird gift also.
What do you have out of left field today, Darren Vaught?
All right, so I thought about this the other day. I was watching the Dodgers game because that was the featured MLB Network broadcast. And you know, you're scrolling through channels. It's like, oh, Joe Davis is on the Dodgers game. I'm going to peek in for a little bit of this. And it was a blowout. 10-1 was the score at the time. And it happened to be on Willie Mays' birthday. So you know that if they're going to mention it, Joe's going to have a bunch of stuff on it. Mm-hmm. Right. And he's just going to go into storyteller mode. And it's part of what makes him the best in the business at it. And he said something kind of similar to how you brought us in with we go out of left field.
Uh-huh.
He said something that just like hit my ear. And I was like, is that the way to say it? So he said, on what would have been Willie Mays' 93rd birthday. Okay.
Okay,
he died just a few years ago, so it's totally realistic to assume that he had a chance to live until this day, right?
Yeah.
But what's the cutoff before we refer to it as what would have been? And I don't mean to be insensitive toward sure. those who have passed here. That's not my intent. But like, for instance, Babe Ruth was born in February of 1895.
Okay.
Right? So this past February, when mentioning it's Babe Ruth's birthday, would we have said, this is what would have been Babe's 131st birthday? No, it wouldn't have. People don't live that old.
I see where you're going. Okay, I'm with you,
know what
you
I'm
now.
Like, what's the cutoff before it's just? Oh, you know, it was his birthday when they were alive. It's funny phrasing to me. I think you get to 100 plus and it's a no-go, right? Because that's just not the reasonable expectation.
Yeah, maybe you cap it at 100. I mean, or like 25 years later, maybe, after the passing. Is this a how old they would be type of...
Yeah, so again, the wording was, today would have been Willie Mays' 93rd birthday. And again, he was in... great shape.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think he was 90 or something close to it when he did pass. So it's like kind of reasonable. But at some point, you're reaching a point in time where it is not realistic that that person would have been alive.
I think you got to cut it off at 100. Maybe even 95 or 98. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
That's pushing it a little bit. Morgan, how would you get in here? How would you answer this question?
95.
95?
Yeah. That's my cutoff. I feel like
that's old enough, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Listen, I'll be ecstatic to get 95. Like, let's be real.
Okay. So last week, Morgan hit us with the age-old pineapple, does it belong on pizza question.
Sure.
So let's see what he has for us today.
Yeah.
What do you have here?
Is water wet?
Okay. All
right. Darren...
doing this bit better than you ever could have, Will. Like, that's...
what, just leaning into the obnoxious, cliche, unusual questions? Not that this is an unusual question segment?
I think it's got something to do with his delivery. He didn't promise a bill of goods there. He just got to it. You know what I mean?
Did I promise a bill of goods?
I got a really good one for you for 30 seconds before he asked it.
I mean, is water wet?
Yeah, water's wet. Water's wet.
I don't know about that.
I don't think it is. I think water makes something wet.
Exactly.
But water is water.
What's the Zoolander line? Water is the essence of wetness. It's not wet. It's just the essence of wetness.
How do you answer this question?
I've had many sleepless nights thinking about this.
I can see.
And
that's why he asked it so quick.
And I've come up with a singular molecule of water alone is not wet because it's not touching another molecule of water. The second you add two molecules of water together, it's wet because it's touching something that is water. Because water can only make water wet.
Well, you're okay. So yeah, you're getting way scientific with like the atoms and the molecules that are in within it that are just kind of like bouncing around, bouncing off of each other. That doesn't feel wet. That doesn't seem like they're wet to me, right? That seems like they're little beads just kind of like shaking around because of the whatever kind of energy that is. I don't remember from science class.
This is why we have this segment, is to get to the bottom of these things. And we did. That's exactly what we did there. Is now Darren Vaught has disappeared off my screen, but I know he's still there. That's been out of left field. There he is.
Here we are.
Yeah.
We're back.
A lot of things out of left field there. Darren, good luck on the call this weekend. Wake, Western Carolina, at the couch. And we'll do it again next week, my friend.
Love it. Love it. Sounds good. See you guys. Whoop. See you guys later. So I was just, let me finish my thought.
I hung up on you. I hung up on you early.
All right. Bye.
Bye. There he goes. Darren Vaught.
I liked his hat.
You know, I was going to ask him what they look like UCLA.
I feel like it was UCLA with a rose through the L.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Number one team in baseball right now?
Yes, they are. They're cooking right now.